Welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm kicking off today with a guest that I am reconnecting with happily because we haven't chatted in well over a year. His name is Dan Oliver, founder of Myrmican Capital. Now, Dan, in the past, you and I have talked a lot about precious metals, and we've also talked a lot about the role of central banks and governments when it comes to the debt system that we live in. You've done a massive amount of historical work, and you relate a lot of these historical references to what we are seeing in today's time. That's where we're going to start here. We are in a pretty crazy time for the world. Cities, states, provinces, countries even are in lockdown right now, all trying to protect against a virus that we are learning more and more about day after day. But one of the developments over the last about week now is governments stepping up and passing funding bills that some of them, like the one in the U.S., looks like it's simply going to be mailing out checks to individuals. We've already had central banks try what seems like almost everything they can, including the Fed lowering rates in an emergency fashion down to zero. All that did was create more panic and fear in the markets. But Dan, can you provide any historical reference for what we are going through now as a society?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for having me back, Corey. But before I answer that question, I just want to go back to a discussion I like to have to set the background of this conversation. That is to remind your viewers what a bubble really is and how it works. Is it's not really a central bank that does it. It's the commercial banks that take deposits and then magnify them by 10 or 20 times and lend them out. And what it does is it creates too much capital bidding on goods. It lowers the discount rates and encourages overcapacity in especially high capex projects like real estate and ships and airplanes and that kind of thing. And then what normally happens is that overcapacity in those items creates falling cash flows because there are too many of them. And then the project default. And then what happens is the Fed runs in, the central banks run in and say, oh my God, there's lack of demand, which isn't true, there's oversupply, but they say, oh, there's lack of demand. So we'll give more reserves to the banks to lower interest rates further and lend more money out to build more assets that people don't really want. So that's the normal credit cycle we've been living through for decades now. And every time the system tries to liquidate, the market tries to assert control, the central banks run in and save the banks and make it worse. And again, this is not the first time this story has been told. You go back through history, this is how credit bubbles work. I think the difference now is that what's happened is that supply chains have broken down. So this virus, as everyone knows, started in China, and the Chinese they create components for everything else. And if you think about modern products, I think I read a car engine has 2,000 different moving pieces in it. If one of those pieces doesn't show up, you can't make the engine, and then you can't make the car. So the whole supply chain grounds to a halt. I know Apple iPhones, incredibly complex devices. You're missing one 30-cent part, and the thing doesn't ship. And so the whole economy came crashing to a halt. So it wasn't, in this case, a overcapacity issue. And we did have that. It was moving there. The economy was already slowing. But the sudden stop was caused by this virus. And so the Fed is printing this money, which normally, when you print money, it's not really printing money. It's giving banks reserves to go lend more against assets. They build more assets. And at least the new money is balanced in value by the assets they build to some level. But that's not the case here. In this case, the money they're printing is function is to simply allow people and companies cash money to pay their rent, to maintain their existing fixed assets, not new ones. And so there's going to be no new capital created by this money. And so this money is going to be highly, highly, highly inflationary, unlike all the other interventions they've done. And to your question of other historical parallels, well, not quite like this. I mean, pandemics don't come along all that often, but usually you see at the beginning of a panic, a great fraud, like a Madoff thing. And that happened in 29 and happened back in the 19th century all the time. Some trading house blows up or something. There's some fraud discovered. And that's what creates the interruption in cash flows that create the cascading defaults that brings the depression on. And again, in this case, it wasn't fraud. It was the virus that simply stopped everything. And so down we go, and the Fed is trying to pump up the assets. But I don't think it's going to work, because I don't think that there's any ability to borrow these funds. If you think about, for example, a tremendously high capex business like Boeing. Boeing makes airplanes. The Fed says, hey, we'll lend you $20 billion. It doesn't matter, $1 trillion. Nobody's buying airplanes right now. And so it doesn't matter how much money you lend them, because people don't buy airplanes. Now, they might use the money to repay their other debt and maintain their net debt position, but they certainly can't use it to go build new capacity, employ people, and do things, which is why the Fed's really been, as they call it, pushing on a string. It's I think it's not going to work. But what is going to happen is the money is going to go somewhere, the money they're printing. And what it's going to go is into current expenditures, which is going to drive consumer prices sky high. I think as soon as they restart the economy, we're going to see a massive amount of inflation a la the 70s. And that's fantastic, fantastic for gold investors. It's a whole sea change to what the gold environment has been for the past 40 years.
So, Dan, one thing that I'm quite concerned about after we finally get through this shutdown, thanks to the COVID-19 virus, is the fact that a lot of people, businesses, big and small, are going to be really swimming in even more debt. They're all going to be going to the government and central banks asking for some sort of bailout. And unless that money comes for free, which I don't think it will, fact of the matter is these businesses are going to be building up debt. This also relates to citizens that have a mortgage or need to pay their mortgage. In Canada, the big banks are saying that they will give possibly a six-month leniency in terms of paying your mortgage. But hey, at the end of that 6 months, you're still going to have a much larger bill and larger mortgage to pay. That concerns me in the fact that we are just building up even more debt in this system. But even if this debt is at, let's say, lower interest rates, how do you see this impacting everything moving forward?
Well, I think that's precisely the right question. And I think the answer is contained in something called Say's Law, which economists ignore, but I think is core to this question. That is what Say said back in, I think, in the 18th century, was that you don't really buy things with money. What you do is you trade what you do for money, and then you use money to buy the thing you want. So really, you're trading your own productivity for somebody else's productivity, and money is merely the means by which you do that, right? And so, but to your question is, well, what if you're not being productive? You're staying at home for 3 months. And so you're not producing anything to get the money to pay your mortgage. They just hand you the money to do it. And so they print the money up as a grant. They just give it to you. And yeah, you can make your mortgage payment. But again, you haven't produced anything to create that money. So it's just strictly debasement. It's not a credit inflation. It's monetary debasement. Or, as you say, if instead they're lending you the money, they say, here you go, but you got to pay it back over a certain time period. Again, you haven't produced anything to get hold of the money to pay your mortgage. So either it has to come down your savings at one place or another, or they have to debase the currency by so much that it's easy for you to get the cash to pay the mortgage back. Either way, the only way it works is if they massively debase the currency to make up for the fact that people really can't make these nominal payments to stay alive over the next few months. And I think it's important to remember, too, that when you have a debt-saturated system, the biggest place in the debt markets for the last few years has been the levered loan market. A levered loan, by definition, is a loan to a company that already had 6x EBITDA leverage. So you're lending more money on top of that. It's absolutely insane. And a small interruption in cash flow in a company that's levered is going to tip it over. And so then they need money right now to avoid default. And even if they get it, again, they're not getting it through selling stuff. They're getting it from a government printing press. And so you can keep the whole thing from teetering up, but only by printing tons of money just to maintain what you already have. And yet I've noticed that already there are things called MREITs, which are these crazy companies that trade in the market that borrow money from money market funds. They pay basically an overnight rate, and they go buy 6 month, 1 year AAA tranches in commercial real estate securitization pools, right, which are supposed to be AAA means they can't default on these things because they're so safe. Well, the two things about that is if the money market fund says, okay, I'm not lending you the money tomorrow, these things, even assuming they get paid off a year from now, well, they can't sell them because there's no market for them. So they're going to zero because they can't meet the margin calls. And secondly, right now, nobody's paying their rent because they can't. And the landlords could evict everyone, I suppose, but then they'll be empty, so they don't want to do that. So again, these structures that said, okay, you take a pool of crappy business loans or mortgages, whatever it is, you tranche them and you make 80% of AAA. That's generally how it works, because you can't imagine in any circumstance more than 20% of people not paying their mortgages. Well, or businesses not paying their loans or business not paying their real estate lease payments. But okay, right now that is happening. Same thing with airplanes. You securitize airplanes, you put them on a package, and you say, well, a terrible recession may result in, I don't know, 5% revenue decline, maybe 7%, the model might say. But what if it's 80% or 60%? The models just simply don't account for that. So again, to avoid a total unwind of the entire financial structure that's been built up over the last decades, the Fed has to do this. They know that's why they're doing it, because they know if they don't do it, there'll be mass defaults everywhere. But again, this money is being created of thin air to simply pay the current bills and not build new assets, but just to pay the old bills. And so that's why it's going to be so inflationary once the economy starts up again.
So regarding this debasement of currencies, currencies are valued against other currencies. And quite frankly...
Well, and real goods.
And real goods. Fair. But right now, governments around the world, they're all going through some sort of emergency funding procedures. All central banks are, as I said, pretty much at zero or negative interest rates. Do any of these systems or countries or central banks stand out to you?
Well, I mean, you know, the big difference in currencies is that the U.S. is the global reserve currency. And as a result, there's trillions, tens of trillions of dollars owed in U.S. dollars and that have been lent into existence. So they're not real. There's only the monetary base is around, I forget, $3.5-4 trillion of money. I don't know where it is today because I keep changing it. But against that $4 trillion of monetary base is owed tens of trillions of dollars. And so when there's a margin call, when the economy stops and all of a sudden everybody owes each other trillions, tens of trillions of dollars, where does it come from? And that's why the Fed has such a false sense of safety, because they say, hey, look, the world is crying out for $10 trillion of cash so we can print it up and not create inflation because it's needed. And that is true. Right, the second is needed, but the second that the dust settles and the economy restarts, how do you get that $10 trillion back? I mean, that's the issue. Again, these people aren't being productive, so how do they get the money to pay the Fed back the loans they're taking out? So the dollar is getting incredibly strong right now because of that, and they're doing their best to weaken the dollar by printing all this money, and they may well succeed if they print enough of it. And that's what they've said: we will do whatever it takes. QE is open-ended; they're going to print as much money as they have to keep the dollar from rising too much, and to make sure that the whole debt pyramid doesn't unravel, doesn't collapse. But again, the result is going to be when they restart the economy, massive inflation, and the lesser currencies, as you point out, are doing all the same things, but they don't have the same international indigenous demand for their currencies outside their borders, and so they'll feel the effects much faster than the U.S. does. But the whole world will, and all these currencies will devalue together, and you know, their currency strategists can tell you, have opinions about which will devalue faster. But in my view, it almost doesn't matter if you're in the gold space. You don't need to worry about which one's devaluing faster. All you know is that gold's going to go up a lot in nominal terms, and in real terms too, as the economy tanks. But the gold is going to be your anchor in the sea of trouble. And that's what it's always been for thousands of years, and it still is today.
Dan, any thought on the gold stocks? Let's drive down to those because, well, gold stocks are still stocks, and recently they've been moving really hand in hand with the U.S. equity markets. So do you see any extra money flowing into the gold stocks, or is this simply a metals play?
I think not yet. I think, as you point out, when the broader markets collapsed, margin calls went out, and anyone who owned normal, you know, traditional stocks and gold stocks got margin calls, so down they went. And that was true for the gold space too. There are big risk-arb funds, and like Ray Dalio, for example, have been saying, "Hey, own gold," for the last year or so. And the problem is that a lot of these strategies have weightings that they maintain. So let's say I'm making this up, but let's say Bridgewater said have 5% gold, and they lose 20% somewhere else. Well, now they got to sell 20% of their gold to make up, to rebalance their portfolio. So there was margin calls and rebalancing that sent all these things into a tailspin. And to be fair, when gold's tanking and your cost of capital is going up, then the gold stock should be worth less. But obviously, we've seen that's burned out itself out by now, and gold is going higher. And I think either the Fed's going to print enough money that gold just goes straight up in the stratosphere, or you're going to have a situation where some big money center bank starts to teeter, and that'll send gold up too, when people start to question the system itself as opposed to the liquidity of the system. Oh my God, is the system going to blow up on me? And that will send gold a lot higher. I think I'm not one of the gold bugs that think that the end game here is Weimar. I think the end game is Cyprus. I think at some point the imbalances between the banks, what they owe and what they have, are going to be so enormous and so hard to paper up that they'll just simply bail in people with excess balances to pay for it. So if I had $1 million in a bank, I'd be really worried about what's going to happen to the excess. If you have 20,000, they'll give it to you. If you get $1 million, you got a problem. And so at some point when you start questioning the system as a system, you got to say to yourself, how do I get my cash out of the system? And the answer, of course, is gold. And your question is the miners. I mean, at some point, you know, in a bubble, nobody cares about cash flow. They care about valuations and capital flow and access to capital, all those sorts of things. And gold doesn't really have that, which is why gold stocks don't, which is why they've underperformed. And the bubble crashes, all anyone's going to care about is cash flow. And what we've seen is oil prices are collapsing, and that's one of the main input costs for gold mining, and gold prices are going up. So, you know, over time, the margins are expanding tremendously for these companies, and their cash flow is going to go up. And so the market will at some point realize that. And I think as soon as liquidations are done, you'll see gold stocks really flying, and I think it's already happened. So I think the next wave of this is gold going much, much higher, and gold stocks going much, much higher, and people are realizing I got to get out of the traditional stocks and get into something that's actually working.
All right, Dan, it's great having you back on the show. I actually received a couple emails recently saying, hey, we haven't heard from Dan Oliver, and this is the type of situation that he's been talking about for a while. So it's great having you back on. I'm going to keep on reaching out to you on a bit more regular basis now, and we'll keep this conversation going. Hopefully, we'll see a light at the end of the tunnel here when it comes to these shutdowns around the world. But right now, man, it's still a very cloudy picture. Dan, thanks for your time. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks for having me.